1962 on a summer's afternoon. I took the bus from Barbara's, she was heavy laden, and away we went along Collingwood Street, that's on the road to Bladen.
Oh, me lads, you should have seen us standing, passing the folks along the road just to see us standing. All the lads and lasses there and all the smiling faces, down the land of Scotland Road, to see the Bladen races.
Yo, what is good, ladies and germs? I don't know how to say that in French. If I did, I would be speaking it right now. This is episode 221 of CHN Radio. It's your boy Elijah, and I'm joined alongside the illustrious man who might know French. We don't know if he actually still remembers any French. Josh.
Oui, je parle un peu français. J'ai pris les langues pour 4 ans.
You know the good news, Josh, is that nobody listening to this podcast can verify whether or not that was actually French. So I'm going to take your word for it. I'm going to say that was flawless French that meant whatever you're about to say it meant.
Yeah, no, I just took French for 4 years, and that's all I know.
Oh, humble brag. 4 years of French. It's a humble brag. Sweet.
Yeah, and then that's pretty much all I have left of it. So
No. I'm going to say it's still a brag. Okay. Yeah. So in case you've been living underneath a rock, Newcastle won their midweek Champions League match against Paris Saint-Germain, led by Kylian Mbappe. We're going to talk about that as well as some other CL stuff. Our Champions League episode is a little bit strange because it kind of goes off the rails mainly because we record it right after the normal episode. So these are meant to be shorter, but we'll see how it goes. I don't know. There's no news to really talk about, but I do want to talk about some pre-match stuff, some build up to all of this jazz. There was a cool pre-match moment, Josh. I don't know if you saw this. And yeah, by the way, subscribe to this podcast and all that other bold. I don't really care.
Ooh,
if you yeah, just subscribe if you haven't already. And
and I make it.
It'd be weird if someone found this episode before any of the other episodes. Like, good on them, I guess. But the other episodes all start with like subscribe.
Who are these people?
Yeah, facts. Oh, we're American. That's who we are. All right. But yeah, there's a pretty cool pre-match moment where Paris Saint-Germain. Actually, in PSG, like, to their credit, they actually did a lot of really cool things, one of which was they interviewed three, and this is actually, check this out on their Twitter. If you go when this episode comes out on Thursday, it's probably fairly close, but they actually interviewed three former players who played for Newcastle and PSG and just asked their thoughts on what it was like playing for both clubs. Also, they had David Ginola and Laurent Robert. They were at St. James's, hosted by both clubs as kind of a reunion. Both players played for PSG and Newcastle. I could be wrong in saying that, but I'm 90% sure I'm correct on that.
I'm like 99% sure you're correct.
Okay, good. That makes me feel good. So that was really cool. And then just some other random weird quirks. Johan Cabaye, who also got a mention in the episode 220 of CHN Radio, which is about the English side of stuff. Be sure to of this past week. Be sure to check that out. Cabaye actually works for PSG. He was a sporting coordinator. He started in, I think, 2021 as a sporting coordinator, kind of in their academy system. And it hasn't been officially announced anywhere, but PSG tweeted this out, that he actually is now the deputy director of the training center, which I think is still academy adjacent. The PSG academy played the Newcastle academy Tuesday, I think, and he was there for that. So just shout out to Johan Cabaye. And then Josh, you had something you wanted to mention as a pre-match thing before we get into the actual match.
Yeah, there was footage of a PSG supporter march to the match.
Yeah.
And I know that these things are prevalent here in the United States. where generally speaking, away fans are pretty safe on the streets of whatever city they visit. Of course, there's always an isolated incident, but there isn't like stabbings, you know?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. Like we talked about in the AC Milan Champions League episode. Yeah.
So what do you think of the away side having a march to the match? And then do you think that English fans would be safe doing that in other countries? Like, Italy,
that's a good question.
France.
Well, I, Josh, should I be controversial or should I just, you know, shut up?
Should Jordies go marching through the streets of Paris when they visit?
I will say this: the way that English fans view American tourists, from what I've heard, is how other countries view English people. So I don't know if I will say potentially. That already happens. Like, English people maybe have already announced their presence, even though that's maybe not what is wanted at the time. They've announced their presence in certain situations, and they are marching through. I don't know. I do think one thing of, like, note is just, like, and again, it's a different club, different team, and once I say the name, I think people will already roll their eyes. But I like the Sunderland fans, like, jumping into fountains and being a bit absurd when they were in the League One. Oh no, sorry, the Championship playoff stuff. Like, that's the kind of rep that I think English fans get. I personally think that it's possible for them to have this. I think it's also a cultural thing. I think this particular supporters match thing was a safety thing, though. When it's all said and done, yeah. I think if you can get all the PSG ultras, and they are ultras, like, putting that out there, you know, we may think of PSG from a outside looking in, from a spectator perspective, as this club that kind of underperforms and is like this rich boy club, and you know about Ronaldinho and Cavani and Zlatan Ibrahimovic and like
they
all the
existed players before that, though.
Exactly,
they have hardcore fans that go back and remember it a long way.
Exactly, and again, just like how Newcastle fans, there are Newcastle fans who are hardcore Newcastle fans before Saudi Arabia came into the picture. Same thing with PSG, and so and as we already know, fans outside of England are a bit more raucous. Just overall. So I think this actually was more of a safety measure than anything else. I don't know if it was like a special privilege thing, because it was a bit rowdy. If you looked at the videos, there were flares, there were banners, there was yelling and all that kind of jazz. I genuinely think that if they hadn't controlled the area, made it a controlled march,
it could have been a riot.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and again, that's the case elsewhere. I don't think we need to go back and do a deep dive on the Russian World Cup, but part of the Russian World Cup was just like they different fan groups just fought. Like, that was a thing. They just were like, hey, we're going to go to the middle of the woods and we're just going to fight Bosnia versus Spain. Just bring your ultras and we're going to fight. So that's interesting. I don't think Newcastle fans will do the same thing or could do the same thing in other countries or in France. I think they will just be obnoxious because
there will be somebody. Not all.
Exactly. There will be people who are going to be obnoxious. But yeah, Overall, I don't think it's going to be an organized march through the streets of Paris or anything of that sort.
Très bon.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So let's hop into the actual kind of review of everything. Let's go with the old three words. There was a lot of three words for this one, because Newcastle won this match 4-1. Pretty convincing win. I think, I don't want to say it took the footballing world by storm, but it definitely was a nice announcement for Newcastle into Europe. I think people overreacted a little bit. And Josh, I think you might co-sign with me on this one. People overreacted to Newcastle drawing 0-0 away at the San Siro, mm-hmm. kind of completely ignoring the fact that, like, it's good to draw away from home in the Champions League. And the San Siro is famously very difficult to win at. People ignored that and just were like, oh, Newcastle not ready for Champions League football. And I think this was a reminder that, no, I think Newcastle might be ready for Champions League football. So
I think it gives you something. I think this result might take those people and give them something to think about. Go back in retrospect and reconsider the result in Milan. And
yeah, for sure.
Go, maybe that was part of the plan. Get your draws away. Get your 3 points at home. Get out. You know, get into the knockouts.
And it's crazy because it's not a controversial plan. It's very common to do those things.
Yeah.
Anyway, three words. Let's get into it. Eric Schmidt, our homeboy in UFC Indiana. Hopefully he's doing well and all that kind of jazz. He says, we have arrived. Toon Army Calgary up in Canada. Shout out to Canada. Land of the Mounties. Said, what the actual? Kim Avery said, let's fucking go. Joe Avery said, top class performance. And real quick, Josh, out of Kim and Joe, who won this round?
Oh. Kim.
Yeah, Kim. Yeah, Joe, sorry. Kim won this round. Stork 9 says burn. Longstaff, magnifique. And then Riverboat John Rivera, John Burgundy says midfield masterclass. John's a good lad. Oops. Doug Kerr 1 says, I've just come. So take that with consideration. Yeah, so I'll mark this episode as explicit. And Mighty Mag says, Sunderland fucking fumed, which also fits the bill for explicit. Josh, you want to reveal to the folks your three words?
Yeah, my trait mot is bonjour, monsieur Mbappe.
Mm. So
that's goodbye. That's goodbye, Mr. Mbappe.
I mean, I didn't know what that meant or whatever you said before that was. So,
yes.
Shout out to you, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, that's the les trois mots is the three words.
No, I don't believe you. So
bon, hello.
Just take that.
Donk.
All right. Real quick, I do. Man, this is going to be a fun one because I'm. Ooh, there's some folks I'm going to give some shout outs to. So Newcastle lineup here. Some rotation, but also good to see some familiar faces in the mix. There was injury concerns, as we kind of mentioned at the tail end of the previous episode about Burnley. Joe Ellington was injured. Botman's obviously injured. Callum Wilson was also injured in this one. So there were some key members missing. So Nick Pope in goal, that's very expected. Kieran Trippier, Jamal Lascelles, Fabian Schär, Dan Byrne made up the back line with Sean Longstaff, Bruno Guimaraes, and Sandro Tonali making up the midfield. And then an attacking trio of Miguel Almiron, Alexander Isak, and Anthony Gordon. On the PSG side, a lot of the usual suspects, not a crazy amount of rotation from them. In the back, Gigi Donnarumma. Jean-Luc Donnarumma, whatever you want to call him. He started in goal. Hakimi at right back. Marquinhos, their captain, at center back. Milan Skriniar, who I really didn't realize was on PSG, was also the other center back.
Yeah.
Lucas Hernandez recently joined PSG from Bayern Munich. He was playing left back. Manuel Ugarte, the young Uruguayan, was in the middle for them, alongside youngster Warren Zaire-Emery, who is 17 years old, coming out of the PSG Academy, I believe. I'm not going to lie, Josh, as a quick aside, very good game for someone who was 17. Did not realize he was only 17 years old. He was all over the pitch for them. So if you're a PSG fan, that's probably one of the biggest takeaways from that. And then the attack that we all know about. Rondal Colomani, I feel like I said that name right, but Colomani, obviously young, great French prospect. Of course, Kylian Mbappe playing in a central role, which is potentially a little bit different than maybe we'd seen him in the past. He's usually out wider as a striker, but he's playing as like a cam in this role. And then Ousmane Dembele played out wide as a right winger, with Goncalo Ramos, the Portuguese youngster who came from Benfica. He started, and that's another FIFA career mode legend for them. Just real quick, I'd started to do this the last match, but just to quickly highlight some of the guys who came off the bench for Newcastle at least. But only three subs for Newcastle. They subbed on Matt Target, Jacob Murphy, and Ellie Anderson. If you were watching the match, all the subs made a lot of sense. And then for PSG, Oh, gosh, I had a yawn. Bradley Barcola came on for them, as well as Vitinha, who played – actually, Vitinha played pretty solidly as well. On their bench, they also had Keylor Navas, Soler, Carlos Soler, Bukele, Ricardo Pereira – oh, Danilo Pereira, sorry, as well as Arnau Teos and Keylor Navas and all that, blah, blah, blah. All right, anyway, to sum this up in the nicest way possible – this was probably one of the best matches altogether that I've probably seen from Newcastle since I've supported the club. And I mean this in like and not in a like Newcastle dominated, and again, Newcastle just won 8-0 against someone. They had another crazy big scoreline last year. It's not about the scoreline, it's about the atmosphere at St. James's. Was the best I think I've ever seen it. You could tell that Newcastle being back in Europe was a big deal, and you could tell that the players knew it, the fans knew it, and PSG knew it.
If they didn't know it, they fucking found out.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, it was just like from kickoff, you had like guys like Anthony Gordon and like who else was doing this? Like Bruno just hyping up the crowd, and it's like every time they raised their hands, like I was watching this with headphones in, and it was like I had to turn down my volume. It was
I'm so excited. I'm gonna go back and rewatch this when we're done recording.
I'm kind of with you on that. Like it was the atmosphere was absolutely amazing. It was astounding. It is exactly what you would expect. One of the best home atmospheres in all the Premier League. One of the toughest places to play. And again, people made the mention of this. PSG's manager had mentioned this beforehand, that they all knew that St. James's is like this fortress. And it's I don't want to get too ahead of myself, but depending on how this group stage kind of goes, I think there could be a very common take next season or even later on this year that St. James's is going to be like one of the toughest places to play in all of Europe.
They could say they knew, but like David Ginola and Laurent Robert and Johan Kabay could tell them until they're blue in the face. Listen, like you're not hearing the words that are coming out of my mouth. This stadium is central to the city, and everyone looks up at it all day. It's their church.
It's the cathedral on the hill.
It's worshipped. Like, and I just, if they didn't know, if they didn't understand, you know, even Mbappe at the end, even at the end of the match, Mbappe just raises his eyebrow and he's just like shakes his head. Like they didn't see this coming. Yeah. It was a hell of a performance.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So kind of summing some stuff up. We mentioned this before, but to get things started for Newcastle, Miguel Almiron scored off of a rebound. Good goal. No complaints there. Dan Burn had a somewhat not really controversial goal, but he scored. That goal went to VAR review. Absolutely dominant in the head. And then Jordy Shaw Longstaff also scored in the 50th minute. And then Cher was a early contender. And Josh, I'm about to say, this is an early contender for goal of the tournament for the Champions League.
Come on.
Fabian Cher leaning back upper 90 from distance. Like one of those where, by the way, I actually kind of want to look up the commentary team. I know one of the names, but I want to get both names right. But this commentary team, if you're American, was
legendary.
Probably, I would say it was probably one of the best possible commentary teams you could possibly get. I do know the color analyst, and this is why I feel bad, because like the play-by-play guy was also really good, but the color analyst was the guy who got all of the shine. But this commentary team featured what's his name? Ray Hudson.
Notoriously from Gateshead.
Yeah.
Made 25 appearances for Newcastle United in like 1974 to 77.
Yeah.
He's a Geordie. on the call.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was a Jordan, and it didn't feel too much of a homer type of thing. He's a professional, and it honestly, it like realistically, it felt like he was just happy to be there overall. Like straight up, like he was excited for PSG versus Newcastle and was excited to see him. Like, he loves it. Some great one-liners, if like just overall. But I mean, just like when Cher scored his goal, it was just screaming "Oh!" from both those guys. It was great. It was a great goal. But I don't really think there's a lot to say here about the match itself. Besides, in the beginning, it was a bit more back and forth, but it did feel like once Newcastle scored, and then especially after the second goal, it was all Newcastle, and PSG were playing catch up. PSG did score. It was I want to say it was a fluke goal, but it was a little sus in terms of like it was someone fell asleep at the back and folks got onside, all that kind of jazz. But at the end of the day, Newcastle were the dominant side, and I think that was probably the main story from anyone who was watching the match, is that it looked like Newcastle were the better team. And not that it matters super much, we'll get into it after we finish our match thoughts here, but this performance did actually put Newcastle at the top of the table for their group, in the group of death. And it's just, it's kind of insane, just because like this was this group of death. You and I were a little nervous about it. I don't think we had high expectations for Newcastle, neither one of us. But again, like we said, they're doing what they're supposed to do. They drew away at San Siro, notoriously difficult venue to play at, and they won at home. And if they can continue to do that, they'll be fine.
Yeah,
you know, it's tough venues that they have to draw away from home at. You know, Signal Iduna Park with Dortmund, obviously, whether or not Dortmund is good or not, that doesn't matter. It's still one of the toughest places to play in all of Europe. And then PSG and the Parc des Princes, like, it's, again, it's a massive stadium. It is another city center stadium, and Paris Saint-Germain are the biggest team in France. So it's going to be tough to pick up those draws, but it does feel like, and I don't know about you, Josh, it does feel like Newcastle could at least get the home win side of things sorted, especially given their only other home matches are against AC Milan side that has still not performed to the best of their ability, and a Dortmund side that is struggling mightily.
Yeah, I think the hardest home, the most difficult home match is behind us, and I think they did it. They took care of business with aplomb. I think that PSG came into this game with a plan. I think Luis Enrique came in, and you look at the 4-2-3-1 that they lined up in, but Dembele, Mbappe, Ramos, you know, and N'Golo Muani, I think it was like all four of them could lead the line. And I think at some points they all four were up in the bit. I think that basically Luis Enrique recognized that Howe likes to press.
Yeah.
And so he said, okay, well, we're going to get into your, you know, you're going to press. Well, we're going to counter press, right? We're going to flood you. So then that way, when you make a mistake, we can capitalize off your mistake. And the thing was, the only time Newcastle made a mistake, PSG got their goal. That's the goal came from Newcastle mistake. But the whole game plan for Luis Enrique was to wait for Newcastle to make mistakes. And if that's the case, then this was very nearly flawless. This might have been the most well-executed game plan I've ever seen by Newcastle. Mm-hmm. And like it seemed maybe even at first, but I think that was Newcastle just not getting their press just right away. And then as soon as they got it right, I don't think that Ugarte knew Skriniar was in trouble. Like,
Marquinhos had a shocker.
I think
Marquinhos was probably the worst out of everyone in this match. I think he probably had the worst match.
They didn't. I don't watch a lot of Ligue 1, but I don't imagine a lot of teams go and they just fucking press PSG.
Yeah. I was going to say that that's not the tempo of that league overall.
Usually it's they just I bet most teams probably try to play PSG on the counter and bunker and try not to get hit too hard.
Yeah.
And that's just not how you can play in the Champions League. But
yeah.
I am just surprised that that was that Luis Enrique didn't change his game plan. You know, because like once they went down a goal, you'd think, well, maybe he would have adjusted. But he, they were down 3-0 before.
Yeah, they never adjusted. Yeah,
they never adjusted. They got
that. Was yeah, that was the, that's what stuck out to me because like PSG is a possession based team in their in league. And that makes sense. Like you have a lot of the best players in the world. Sure, whatever. Like it makes like you have so many talented players that eventually you're going to break someone down who sits back against you. The issue is that, like Josh kind of alluded to, not a lot of teams press, and so it did feel like PSG were uncomfortable with the press for sure. And like even in possession, and part of it, and this is where it gets to a you can have a whole discussion about whether or not it's the atmosphere or whether or not it's Newcastle's tactics, but their back line, who normally is completely good and competent at playing out the back, and again, no slouches. Marquinhos, one of the most reliable, you know, center backs in the world right now. Just overall, he's a solid center back, plays well for the Brazilian national team, all that kind of stuff. Skriniar, again, another. Hopefully, I'm saying his name right. Skriniar, another reliable player, and then two of the best fullbacks in the world. Like,
well, I felt like Hakimi was still. I think I felt like that right side was good, despite the rest of the team.
Oh, for sure, but it doesn't change the fact that, it doesn't change the fact that playing out of the back, PSG struggled with overall, and I'm going to include that back line as a unit because they were the ones that really were driving the dysfunction in playing out of the back. Gigi Donnarumma, again, one of the best goalkeepers in the world, and that back line full of some of the best players in the world. Like however you want to slice it, like Lucas Hernandez is one of the best left backs in the world. Like it's without a doubt. Like it's insane that St. James's was able to do this to this back line.
They shook them. I had another selection for my three words was pressed to oblivion was another three word selection I had. Yeah, pressed to dust is what I wrote down. We pressed them like right out of the goddamn game.
So, yeah, I would agree. So on that note, I know we've spoken a lot about just kind of random things and the goals and all that kind of jazz. Do you have a player of the match that you kind of want to highlight? Anyone that stuck out to you? I don't think it needs to be a player of the match, but anyone you want to talk about in particular on a Newcastle side that you feel deserves some praise?
I think there's 11, but Isak maybe. I mean, Almiron's goal, like the absolute joy in his face. Longstaff, having been back in the side, they're playing the way we expected them to play. Like Longstaff, you've said it. We cannot emphasize this enough. Like Longstaff should be called up to England. Like he's playing well enough that I think he should get the call up. And maybe I'd actually give a shit about international football if Longstaff gets called up to England. I'll watch.
You'll watch, but you won't care.
But for me, it's the press and the energy that came from the front three. And in particular, Isak was relentless. And he wasn't just running at players. He was changing the angle of his run. I think this is why it worked, is they weren't just chasing the ball. They were running into position to cut off the passing lanes. It was like a very NFL cornerback safety kind of thing to do, was to not just to challenge the, you know, directionally exactly where the ball's going, but like to make the distribution difficult and make them have to sort of check down to other passing options. And and you saw that Isak was basically a free safety out there. He was just canceling passing options. It was great.
Yeah. He looked good out there. I think another just on the attack mention, Anthony Gordon, phenomenal in my opinion. Just another guy who excelled in the press in this one. But if I were to pick one player that really impressed me, and again, I want to say Tonali was good in this one, Longstaff was good in this one, Bruno was really good in this one as well. I am thoroughly impressed with Jamal Lascelles. Just overall, I think it's one of those where you don't understand it unless you've been a Newcastle fan for a while. Jamal Lascelles was a good but not great player for Newcastle. That's him in a nutshell. And so much can be said about his leadership capabilities, his qualities as a leader. I think even from his beginnings, I think people might have forgotten one of the youngest captains in Newcastle history, because while Newcastle were failing, he felt the need to speak up and try to become outspoken. A leader for Newcastle.
Yeah.
Very outspoken about how disappointed he was in the team.
Yeah. I remember this. I remember him and just being outspoken and saying, we can do better. He's fierce. He's determined. He is so determined that for me, he can play in a game in the Champions League against a team like PSG and looks like he belongs. And that's that determination. Yeah. That's that fierceness. He's a Premier League center back. And he belongs.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing. It's kind of what I was alluding to is like, I think people appreciated Lascelles, but there were clear flaws in his game. He's not a ball-playing center back. It was just one of those where you knew that he was never going to be a world-class center back, which I don't think that was his goal. I don't think that's what he aimed. I don't think that's the club's goal. Yeah, and when Kieran Trippier came in and Newcastle made some signings and he lost his spot, and I think – again, it's not a crazy assumption. People were like, well, Lascelles might be done here. And Eddie Howe, to his credit, has had Lascelles' back since the very beginning, has said that Lascelles is the captain of this club. And he may not be wearing the armband every single match, but he is the captain of this club. And we've seen it. And Kieran Trippier has mentioned it. He said Lascelles is the captain. When Lascelles and Trippier are on the pitch at the same time, Lascelles wears the armband. And I don't know. It's just really cool to see a guy who, I'm not going to say was completely written off by Newcastle fans, but in a way was written off by Newcastle fans. I think, and myself included, I was very much like Fabian Scher. I'm not even including Jamal Lascelles as an option in the center back rotation. I'm saying, we need to find another right-footed center back to spell Fabian Scher every so often, without even taking into consideration that we have a right-footed center back that can spell Fabian Scher, because it, again, it's not his own fault. It's just we know his limitations as fans, and we don't expect Lascelles to be leading the line for a team that is dominating in Champions League or anything like that. And to his credit, he stepped up massively. He was good in the Burnley match. And he was good in the Man City match, and he was good in this match as well. And I think he deserves some credit. He even had a 1v1 with, I think, Dembele, where he forced Dembele, or it was Dembele or Mbappe, one of those two, into just the wrong decision. And it was just like, hell yeah, Jamal Lascelles. Like, it's cool to see him do this. It's a different Lascelles than we saw, who forced himself to play through injury in a cup match against a League Two side. Like, it's a completely different Jamal Lascelles. And it's just cool to see that. So that's it on me on the Lascelles rant. I thought he was good. To me, he was my personal man of the match. Anything else before we move on to the other stuff?
It's just, again, I'm going to go back and rewatch this because it's just so amazing. It's look, every generation has its marker. And I think mm-hmm. this game, I think that we just witnessed history. I think that this game will reverberate through the history of the club.
Yeah, that's a good shout. All right, so on to some other things. I think just a friendly reminder with these Champions League matches, we also kind of want to give an update on some of the other happenings around Champions League, particularly regarding the things that affect Newcastle. One thing that I I want to mention is Dortmund hosted AC Milan. It was a 0-0 draw. So Milan did what they were supposed to do. Dortmund, potentially, that's just another one where we had mentioned this when we first started talking about Champions League stuff, how kind of at the time, outside of PSG, a lot of the other teams in the group were potentially underperforming to, you know, in the league. Dortmund is usually clearly one of the best two teams in Germany, and just so far this season, they're just at the bottom of the top four. And part of that is changing of the guard, blah, blah, blah. Like, Leverkusen was also really good. You know, yeah. Bayern aren't even in first. That's a different conversation altogether, but at the end of the day, Dortmund is a team you expect to be in the top two in Germany, and they aren't right now, and there's some legitimate criticism coming out of the Dortmund camp. Same thing with AC Milan. AC Milan is another team who you expect to always be near the top of the table, and they're in second right now. They've gotten better, but there have been some suspect performances from them as well. And in their match, again, against Dortmund, they drew 0-0. This means that after today's results, Newcastle are sitting atop of the table with 4 points, with the goal differential of 3, and they're at the top of the group right now. So shout out to them. Mm-hmm. So that's it on that end. Nothing really else to talk about there. One thing I wanted to talk about, Josh, that we didn't talk about the last time because I didn't actually think about it until some fans. And this happened so long ago. I'm sorry. I really wish I could give folks credit. Mentioned that young Kuba Minte, Newcastle's latest signing from was it the Danish league? The Danish league Odense. He's actually played a lot or a decent amount for Feyenoord, and so they're in Champions League right now, which, you know, that's something to think about. But Yankumbe has actually played a little bit for them in Champions League. They're in Group E, which is the group with Atletico Madrid, as well as Lazio and Celtic. Right now, they're in third place with 3 points. They actually had a pretty cracking little competition, little match with Atletico Madrid away from home today. Yankumbe Minte came off the bench in this one. Played decently. He had a 6.9 rating, according to most things I saw, something between 6.7 and 7.1, so we'll call it 6.9. Pretty solid match against them. They lost 3-2, but I just kind of want to keep following that because he did actually play last round of Champions League matches for Feyenoord. He started. He's been starting, and that was against Celtic, and they won 2-0. He didn't score or assist, but one of the Newcastle fans I follow pointed out that he's been playing a lot of pretty important matches for Feyenoord. So that's a good sign if you're a Newcastle fan that they've got a guy on loan who, again, on loan playing pretty important
getting
matches.
Getting Champions League experience,
getting Champions League experience. Go ahead, yeah.
I was to say, when we bring him back into our fold, you know, next year or the year after that, he's ready. He's going to come in with more Champions League experience than maybe, you know, some of if we get another new signing next year, you know, just based on what he's going through right now. It'll be great.
Yeah, he's kind of competing for minutes with a really solid group of really good young players. In that Feyenoord attack, they have Calvin Stengs. As well as he's playing a little bit of striker minutes, splitting time with Santi Jimenez, who is probably one of the best young players in CONCACAF right now. He's 10 goals for Ajax, not for Ajax, for Feyenoord this season, as well as Igor Paixão, I think that's how you say his name, who's a Brazilian player who's playing out on the left-hand side. So Minte is kind of rotated in between playing as a inverted winger on the right side, as well as playing a little bit of striker. But again, for a 19-year-old to be getting this much experience, you cannot complain if you're Newcastle. In fact, this is a best-case scenario. He is constantly being thought about when the manager's putting together the team sheet. So that's all you can ask for. Yeah. That being said, that concludes another episode of CHN Radio. This is episode 221. I'm Elijah. That was Josh. Josh, you got anything else you want to add to the mix?
I just want to say bien au revoir, PSG. Nous reverrons bientôt. We'll see you later.
Goodbye. Oh man, this guy with the fringe. But yeah, that's it. That's all we got for y'all. And this one, away the lads, and we love you guys. Looking at the old time bridge, I'm coming home, Newcastle. I might as well have been in jail. I'd walk the streets all day. I'll need for a bottle of your own brown ale. I'm coming home, Newcastle. If you never win the cup again, I'll brave the dark at St. James's Park at the Gallagher Den in the rain. I'm coming home. To be a Geordie and to live in Geordie land. Some people think we're bawdy and we're hard to understand, and they say it's just self-pity and we're not so very tough, cause the people in the big fat city haven't had it tough as rough. I'm coming home, Newcastle. You can keep your London wedding. I'd walk the streets all day. I'll meet for a bottle of the River Tyne. I'm coming home, Newcastle. I wish I'd never been away. I'd kiss the ground for the welcome sound of me mother saying, "Hinny, how we? I'm coming home." And I miss the old blind busker who stands at Fenwick's door. He plays a mean accordion. You've all seen him there before. I love the Geordie heroes. There's so many famous names like Lindisfarne in Gaza, Brendan Foster in the Gateshead Games. I'm coming home, Newcastle. I might as well have been in jail. I'd walk the streets all day. I'll need for a bottle of your own brown ale. I'm coming home, Newcastle. If you never win the cup again, I'll brave the dark at St. James's Park at the Gallagher Den in the rain. I'm coming home, Newcastle. You can keep your London wine. I'd walk the streets all day. I'll need for a bottle of the River Tyne. I'm coming home, Newcastle. I wish I'd never been away. I'd kiss the ground for the welcome sound of me mother saying, "Hinny, how we?" I'm coming home, Newcastle. I might as well have been in jail. I'd walk the streets all day. I'll need for a bottle of your own brown ale. I'm coming home, Newcastle. If you never win the cup again, I'll brave the dark at St. James's Park at the Gallagher Tent in the rain. I'm coming home.